Right. First of all, the purpose of this trip is to go to different campuses to support our Talmidim, but also basically to support the Orthodox communities that exist on different campuses. The fact that Orthodox communities are being created is critical and very, very important, and it's really created very, very, I think, intense and profound Jewish life and Orthodox life and the Torah life on different campuses. Certainly one of the stops is Queens, and the community here is great, and I hear that Rabbi Sharif is doing wonderful things.
Second that.
What? He brought me in, right? I want to start from the end. Take a look at source number 10. Okay, somebody commented that the title is self-explanatory, so I'm not going to explain the title. But one of the things that really trouble people when one talks about Yetzias Mitzrayim, really troubles people, is the fact that the Jews asked to borrow from their neighbors, and their neighbors, God, of course, gave their made them favorable, and they agreed to lend them all kinds of klei chesef and klei zav, and then the Jews took them and they left Mitzrayim. And what do we think about that? Yeah.
Steal it?
That's pretty bad, right?
Yeah.
Doesn't sound so good. So there's a Gemara in Sanhedrin that deals with that. It's source number 10. Shuv pa machat ba'u b'nei Mitzrayim ladunim Yisrael lefnei Alexandros. Now, I don't know if this happened or not, but Alexander is like the profile of a non-Jew who's rules the entire world, and therefore people go to him with their complaints. So whether it was historical or not historical, I don't know. I find it hard to believe that it was actually historical, but who knows? And they said, they went to Alexander, and they said, Harehu Omer, look at what it says in the Torah, Hashem natan et chena amazeh b'enim tzraim, v'yash ilum, so ask from the Jews to return all those things that they stole from us. Somebody who was not one of the Talmidei Chachamim says, let me go and answer them. Let me go, right? If they win, he was a fool. He's not one of the Talmidei Chachamim. I don't want anything from this. If we win, it's the Torah that won. If we lose, an idiot lost. So they said, okay, you know what? Good idea, go. Halach v'dani mahem. Amar lahem, mehechan atem mevim raya? How do you know that we took the money from you? Amar lahem, min haTorah, from your Torah. If you're accepting the Torah as proof, so there are other things that say, they were 430 years in Mitzrayim. So give us the salary, the wages of 600,000 people that worked for 430 years. Okay, that's the story, and of course he won. Okay. How does this Gemara respond to your question that it's stealing? It says it's not stealing. Why? If you take a look, you know, it's not a question of injustice, right? But rather, as far as justice is concerned, if you take a look at the Nevuah Avram Avinu, that Gei Azaracha Be'ezel Hem Abamot Shana Vavadum Ve'inu Otam Ve'achrechen Yitzibu Kushkadol, it seems perfectly justified. After enslaving a people for 400 years, afterwards, Achaychen Yitzubu Chushkadol is perfectly justified. How they got that is another question, but the fact, it's not stealing, it's money that really belonged to them. That's what this Gemara is saying. Right? But that's not the problem that bothers me. There's a different problem that bothers me. But before I get to the other problem, this wasn't the only time that they fooled the Mitzrim. What did they tell Paro? What did Moshe tell Paro? Let my people go for 3 days. That's what he told them. I want to go for 3 days in the Midbar, and we'll worship God. And what did he really want? He really wanted to go free, right? He said, let my people go, right? That's, let my people go, and then we'll come back. So, basically, Moshe was tricking Paro. Now, does that bother me morally? Is that unjustified? They were unrightfully enslaved. He tricked them into being slaves for us, and he took them as slaves, and probably that was not justified. So to trick Paro to go free, it doesn't really bother me as far as the legality is concerned. Right? So what does bother me? That's it? No problems? We've solved our problems. I'm terribly troubled by this. Doesn't bother you at all? What bothers me is that it's a terrible Chilul Hashem. God, right? The entire story of Yetzias Mitzrayim is to try to prove Bizote Daki Ani Hashem, Bizote Daki and Kamonu B'Karach. God is all powerful, God can do whatever he wants, and God managed to free his firstborn son by tricking Paro. And he managed to get them paid for all their labor by tricking the Egyptians. Now isn't that Chilul Hashem? Now, the problem here is not one of whether it's ethical, whether it's moral. You could justify it if you have a greater perspective, a greater historical perspective, and you're not looking at the one point that they came out of Mitzrayim, but you're looking at the entire flow of history, that they were enslaved, and they were slaves for many, many years, and they were taken advantage of, and they were murdered. And you know, so you could justify, when you take a broader look at history, you know, receiving their wages in this way and tricking Paro to go free, you couldn't just justify all that. That's not what bothers me. It's not the ethical problem, the moral problem. What bothers me is the religious problem. You know, how does that look? You know, we're only going for 3 days. You know, lend us all your things, and then they run away. They escape Paro. They escape the Egyptians. That's what bothers me. So what I want to do is I want to try to revisit the story of Yetzias Mitzrayim in a way that, you know, at least in my mind, has some way of resolving, I think, what's a very, very basic problem, a basic misunderstanding. We don't really know what's going on in Yetzias Mitzrayim if we can't resolve this problem. Why did HaKadosh Baruch Hu tell Moshe, go ask for 3 day vacation? Why? Why couldn't you say, let my people go? Why does he have to say, let my people go via Abduni Bamidbar? Forever. Why let my people go for 3 days in the Midbar in order that the Shuar should be with the clear it seems to be referring to the fact that they'll come back. You know, moreover, you know, there's a certain amount of double talk from the beginning of the story. Take a look at the first verse. Right, when Moshe sees the snare, and he's HaKadosh Baruch Hu tells him, "I'm sending you on a mission." So the pasuk says, "Va'ered latzilo miyad Mitzrayim, ulahaloto min haaretz ahu el eretz tova ruchaval eretz zavat chalav udvash el makom aknani achitiv amriv apriziv achivah yusi." Why am I sending you? I'm sending you to bring them to Eretz Yisrael. Va'ata. And now, lecha v'eshlacha el paro v'otziat ami b'nei Yisrael Mitzrayim. I'm going to send you to Paro to take them out of Mitzrayim, to free them, totally. Right? And then, a few psukim later, it says, lech v'safet z'knei Yisrael v'amat aleim, Hashem elokei avotechem nir'a elai, elokei avram Yitzchak v'yakov, nemor, pakol pakarti etchem. Right? Go tell the Jewish people, you're going to be freed. And then, the next pasuk, it says, "Uvasa atav zeknei Yisrael melech Mitzrayim v'amatei lav Hashem kev v'ram nekrai leinu v'ata nelchana derech shloshi v'mibar v'zibachal Hashem kev." Go tell the people to Am Yisrael that you're freeing them. Then go to Paro and say, "We want a 3 day vacation." What's going on here? And then it continues, "Vaki telechu lo telechu rekam," and you'll borrow money from your neighbors, and you'll take it. So the question is why was it done in this way? I mean, if you take a look at the story, you'll see consistently that Moshe, whenever he talks to the people, we're going free. Whenever he talks to Paro, we want to go. Sometimes he mentions the 3 days, sometimes he doesn't. We want to go in order to worship God in the Midbar. That's all. He never says a word about going free. The entire dialogue or argument between Moshe and between Paro throughout the Esrei Makos, the entire negotiations, I would say, are revolve around the question of what, how does Paro know that when they go to the Midbar, they're going to come back? Right? Take a look at source number 3. Vayikra Paro el Moshe el Aaron vayomer lechuv zevchul alefechem ba'aretz. Okay, I'll let you worship God. Do it here in Mitzrayim. Don't go away. They want some collateral to know that they're gonna, that they're not gonna, he's not gonna lose them. You want to worship? Okay, do it here in Ba'aretz. I can't. You know, you'll be very, very upset because you worship the sheep and we can't sacrifice it. You know, they'll rightfully stone us. So derech shloshe yamim nelech b'midbar, where we go for a 3-day journey in the wilderness. Okay. So again, so the first stage of the negotiation, Paro says, fine, I'll let you go. Do it here. I'll let you worship God, but do it here. Moshe says we can't. Right? What's the next stage? Source number 4. Vayoshevet Moshevet Aaron el Paro vayomar lehem lechu ivduet Hashem elokeichem mi v'miyachem. Who's going? We're taking everybody, men, women, and children. What does Paro answer? Right? You want to go worship God? So go with you, with the older people. You don't have to go with the infants. Why did Paro not want them to go with the infants? Because with their children, left them aside. They'll come back. Okay, next stage. Vayikra Paro Moshe vayomer lechuv du Hashem ratzonchem v'karachim yitzag. This is already right before Makas Bechoros. This is after Choshech. Okay, go, but leave your tzon u'bakar. Leave your property. Vayomer Moshe, not only are we going to take our property, we're going to take your property too. And then Paro gets upset. Why did he say leave your property?
Collateral.
So you'll come back. Collateral. You know, that's the entire issue. The entire issue is, how does Paro know they're going to come back? They only asked to go for 3 days. How does Paro know he's going to come back? Paro doesn't trust them. I guess for good reason. They didn't come back. Okay. On Leil HaSeder, what do we celebrate? Leil HaSeder. What? Were they freed on Leil HaSeder?
No.
Were they? Right? Take a look at the pasuk. Source number 6. Vayikral Moshe el Aaron laila. Right? After Makas Bechoros, Paro came and he went to him and he called for Moshe and Aaron. And he said, Kumu tzu'u mitoch ami. Leave. Okay? What is he saying? Is he saying go free? I don't know yet. Gamatem. Gam b'nei Yisrael, ulechu ivdu at Hashem kedabrachem, gam tzonchem, gam bekachem kechu, kasher dibatem, falechu, uverachtem gam uti. What does he say? What does he say? Does he say, you're free to go, we don't want you anymore, you're no longer slaves? What does he say? He says, you can take the b'nei Yisrael, take your tzon, take your bakar, kasher dibatem, like you said. You want to go worship? You said you have to take your son. Fine. You want to go out of Mitzrayim? Fine. You want to take the children? Fine. You want to take the son of Bakar? Fine. Did he say never come back? And then later on in that same parak, Vayihi miketz shloshim shana v'abamot shana vayihi be'etzem hayom hazeh yatzu kol tzevot Hashem eretz Mitzrayim. This is the day of Yitzias Mitzrayim. That's it. We're all free. What do you mean they're all free? Okay. That's the problem. So I'm sure you've all thought about this problem before. So do you have a solution? None? Somebody, help me. What?
Well, it doesn't say anything about them not. It doesn't say anything about their plans after they left. Maybe they weren't originally. Maybe Moshe didn't know that they originally weren't going to come back.
Moshe didn't know. I don't know. Maybe Moshe didn't know that
their plan wasn't.
That. Who's they?
Bnei Yisrael's plan.
Bnei Yisrael's going to do what Moshe tells them to do, right?
Right. So I'm saying the plan for Bnei Yisrael wasn't originally that they were going to leave?
I don't know. Well, we'll find out. Well, I mean, it's, the whole thing is strange. This whole story is strange, right? Did Bnei Yisrael run away?
Not
really. What? Not really. They didn't really run.
They were given permission, but like as you said, it says Kasher Dibartem, which I guess Paro was assuming meant 3 days. So they were given permission to leave, not really running away, but they weren't really given permission to not come back.
They weren't given permission not to come back. They were expected to come back.
Yeah, exactly.
They expected to come back. Right?
They didn't really run away. They were permission to leave, but they were supposed to.
Well, there's a strange Rashi. I'll talk about it in a second. Yeah.
I mean, it's obvious that Paro didn't trust them. So the fact that he does let them go in the end, he couldn't have thought that they were actually going to come back. Mm-hmm. That wouldn't make any sense. Otherwise, there wouldn't have been this whole like back and forth.
How do you know?
How do I know?
Right.
I mean, for me, it's kind of like logical. Like if he has like.
No, it's 100% logical. Do you have a pasuk? I think you're right. Yeah. Take a look at take a look at source number 8. Vayugad lemelech Mitzrayim ki barach ha'am vayafoch levav paro v'avada v'la'am vayomru mazot asinu ki shilachnu et Yisrael me'avdeinu. What have we done? We freed them. We freed them from bondage. He doesn't say we freed them from bondage for 3 days. He said, what have we done? We freed them from bondage. Now, doesn't that contradict what he said? We didn't free them from bondage. I said, go worship God like you said and then come back. Okay, I didn't say explicitly come back, but that's what I, obviously, that was all I meant. What do you mean we freed them from bondage? There's a contradiction over here. Okay? So for biblical critics, we'll say, okay, two different documents. But I'm not a biblical critic. Right? So how do I deal with this? There's a contradiction. So
could it be that, like, only after the fact did Paro realize like how it was in a sense interpreted. Like he never really thought that he was, you know, they were freeing him, but after the fact he's like, wait a second, we freed them from bondage. When we told them to leave, they took it as in they could actually leave for good. Could it be something like that?
Yeah, what's your name? I think you hit it on the head.
Gabriella.
What?
Gabriella.
Yeah. So, I mean, I think you hit it on the head. In other words, there's an intentional contradiction here, or an ambiguity, right? Because officially what Paro said is go worship as you said. However, he knows, you know, it's not a big secret. He knows Yisrael's never going to come back. The Egyptians know Yisrael's never going to come back. There's no reason they should come back. Why in the world should they come back? They haven't left their children there. They haven't left their property there. Why should they come back voluntarily to be enslaved again? Why? So everybody knows that they're not going to come back. You know, that's clear. So what Paro did was he freed them from bondage. He didn't say it officially. He didn't sign a document that said you're no longer slaves. He said go for 3 days. But he knows all the negotiations up until that point to try to have some kind of collateral that they're going to come back. It all failed. It all collapsed. So he said, okay, no collateral, go. But please, please, please come back. But he knows they're not going to come back. Why should they come back? Right? You free people from prison. Do whatever you want. Come back in a month to prison. Are they going to come back in a month to prison? You know, maybe, I don't know. It's, you know, what's the question is, did they run away or didn't they run away? You know, it's not a contradiction. It's an intentional ambiguity because there's something that they did officially, but on the other hand, everybody knows. Everybody knows. Jews know, the Egyptians know, Paro knows, everybody knows what's really going on. So there's like a game here. There's a facade. Okay? My question is, did they run away? Right? They left. And there's a really strange Rashi. I really don't know how to explain this Rashi.
Question?
Yeah.
If everybody was clear on the fact that that was what was going on, then coming back to your original Chilul Hashem question, then why not just be straight up front from the beginning and say...
I'm not there yet. I don't know yet. maybe I'll figure it out. Right? We're working on it. Yeah, the question is, did they, you know, they left, and Rashi says the reason that Paro chased after them is because he sent people with them, the secret service with them, right? And he saw that after 3 days they didn't come back. And therefore, he said, okay, let's go chase them. You see, he saw that the Jews breached their contract, refused to come back, and that was why he decided to chase them.
I just think that example of the Pasuk is pointing, source number 8, the Pasuk, the last word of the Pasuk is the key, at least in my mind, to the Pasuk. It's not that we sent the Jews, it's that we freed them, we sent them from slavery, until they got to those 3 days in which they, at which point they didn't return. It was just like, okay, we have sent them. He acknowledged that fact. But then the fact that we had sent them from slavery was really the
Yeah, but I'm saying I just don't understand Rashi, because you know, they did come back after 3 days. They didn't run away. They came back. They turned around. They really did come back. You know, take a look at the beginning of Bishalach. Vayhi Bishalach paro et ha'am v'lo nacham lo kem derech et plashtim. Okay? And then it says, Vaydaber Hashem al Moshe le'mor, daber al bnei Yisrael v'yashuvu, let them come back, v'yachanu lefnei piachirot, they're going towards the midbar, and turn around and come back. V'yachanu lefnei piachirot ben migdol v'en ayam lefnei ba'altzon echot tachan ral yam. So where did they go? They went from Sukkot to Eitan b'ktzeh midbar. They went to the edge of the wilderness. They turned around and came back. Now, when I said the 3-day vacation, that's really not true. They were supposed to go for 3 days in the midbar. They hadn't gotten to the midbar. They reached the midbar and they turned around. They came back to Mitzrayim. They did an about face. God said, turn around, make an about face. They come around and make an about face. Okay? Rashi, I think it's a very, very difficult Rashi. He says that he sent people with them. Maybe I have it here.
Number 9.
But the truth is, they did turn around and come back. So, you know, that's not. But aside from that, also, they never said 3 days. They said 3 days. We'll walk for 3 days to the midbar. They got to the midbar and turned around. So, Israel does not breach their contract. Who breached the contract? Paro breached the contract.
Which contract?
He let them go to worship God, and then he started chasing them. Okay. We'll get back to that later. I'm going to ask one more question, and then I'm going to try to weave the pieces back together. Why is Kriyas Yam Suf necessary? They were freed. They have all the rechush. Let them go. Why do they come back? Why? You know, Kriyas Yam Suf is entrapment. You know what entrapment is? You know, like when police do something to, like they convince some criminal to do a crime and then they arrest them for it, right? They said, turn around and come back, and that way, if you do that, Paro will chase you, and then I'll be able to kill him. You know, it's a little bit strange, isn't it? Why was it necessary? They were free.
To kill Paro.
So they could have killed him in Makas Bechoros. Why was it necessary for Kriyas Yam Suf to kill Paro? They could have done it. Yeah.
I guess to show the hand of God to Bnei Israel, because they were kind of disbelief that they were going to.
Okay, that's also true. Okay, on one level, that's true also. It's not what HaKadosh Baruch Hu says, but it's also true. All right. I think the main problem is why this separation between what, you know, this double talk. Why are you saying one thing to Paro and something else to Israel? Why not straight out go and say, let my people go? Let my people go and worship me. But let them go. They're not yours. B'ni b'chori Yisrael, they're not yours. And I think the answer is, again, there are other answers. I think the answer is, you know, let my people go was the refrain, you know, for the cry for freedom, you know, of the blacks. Let my people go can be a cry for human rights. let my people go via Avdun Bamidbar is a religious cry. It's not a cry of human rights. The struggle, the major, primary struggle...
Religious rights?
Not rights. The primary struggle between HaKadosh Baruch Hu and Paro, Kaviyach, if you can call it a struggle as it were, is that God says, I am God, B'ni B'chor Yisrael. And Paro says, I don't know you. And the main thing was to... The main point to be satisfied on many, many levels was to prove not only to Paro, not only to the world, but to Yisrael as well, that there is a God. The main, you know, to come and to be involved in history and show at some point in history that there is a God who's involved, and that God is Hashem Elokei Yisrael, that is the primary purpose of Yetzias Mitzrayim. A secondary purpose is that the people that were enslaved should also go free and begin their march towards Eretz Yisrael. The primary purpose is a religious purpose.
How does that answer create Yom Suf versus any of the other?
Doesn't answer anything. I'm just pointing out that that's the primary purpose. If the demand would be to let the people go free, then it would become a question of civil rights. What you have to do in order to clarify that this is a religious issue is separate the human rights issue from the religious issue. I'm not asking that these human beings should not be enslaved, that they should go free. I'm asking for something else. They should worship me. The only way to do that is to not ask that they go free. It wasn't in order to fool Paro, but rather it was in order to isolate the religious issue from the question of human rights. Yeah.
Even in the eighth note, when you said that, you know, Paro realizes that he sent the people free from their bondage, like the word is like me'ovdenu. Right, which has the same shortage as the entire time Moshe is saying, no, let our people serve.
That's a very good point. Very good point.
So in essence, he's basically freeing them. The primary purpose was that religious aspect, because the Jews were essentially free for like a year, right? Because they weren't like doing heartbreak labor at this time. They were free for like a year by now. Like they weren't like during the entire Mako, they weren't slaves per se.
It's a very good point. I just take a look at the following pasuk. Source number 12. Ko'am Hashem Elokei Yisrael shalach et ami v'yachogu li b'midbar. V'ayom paro mi Hashem asher shma b'kolo l'shalach et Yisrael. Lo yadati et Hashem gam Yisrael lo ashalach. Ko'am paro eneinu noten lachem tefen. I mean, do you pick up the Ko'am Hashem and the Ko'am paro, the juxtaposition of the two? You don't realize that that's intentional? Koma Hashem. I don't know Hashem. Koma Paro. Right? Bezote daki ani Hashem. Bezote daki en kamon v'cher v'arz. Bezote daki. What's the other one? Ki ani Hashem. Bezote ki en kamoni. Bezote daki ani Hashem. V'kavda b'faro v'chokhido. The primary purpose is religious purpose. If on the other hand it would become integrated with the question of freeing the people from bondage, then it would blur the religious moment of the entire Samakos. Why is this happening? Because people should go free, or because God is God? So the only way to do it is really to isolate the two issues. So you're right. There is a dual purpose for Eser Makos. There's a dual purpose, but vis-a-vis Moshe versus Paro, the primary issue is the religious issue. And not only is it a religious issue vis-a-vis Paro, but it's also a religious issue vis-a-vis Yisrael, who are watching all this, who eventually come to Vayamin Bashem Moshe Avdo. So you have to isolate the two, and the only way to isolate the two is separation. To separate it, we're not asking to go free. Okay? Now, regarding the question of Chilul Hashem, the people did not run away. Regarding the question of, I mean, first of all, one should realize that when you say vayashilu, they borrowed. Lishol kilim doesn't mean to borrow. Lishol kilim means to request, right? When it's juxtaposed to renting, then when you're lishol kilim. So lishol is for a certain period of time, so then it's to borrow. But if juxtapose it to buying, then lishol is to ask for a present. Lishol doesn't necessarily mean to borrow and then to give back. Lishol means to request. It's sheila. So if I give you money and I rent something, that's not sheila, because that's a monetary transaction. If I buy something from you, that's a monetary transaction. If on the other hand I borrow something from you, or if you give me a present, that's a result of a request. Now, again, as I said, everybody knew, even though officially they were only free to go worship God, everybody knew that they were going and they're not coming back. So, first of all, everything that's given is given with an awareness that they're not coming back. That's A. But even so, being that they said they were going to come back, not to come back, is still Chilul Hashem. So they did come back. The problem was, as I pointed out, the person who breached the contract was Paro. Paro said, okay, you can go worship God. They did not breach their part of the bargain. And Paro came and chased them. But not only did Paro chase them, Paro chased them with his army. Till this point, the army was not involved. You had the Noksim, and you had the Shotrim, and you had no army. Because the army is used for an enemy. Right? You have an internal police. But the army, they're on the border. They're supposed to struggle with enemies. Why is the army sent at this point? The army wasn't sent the entire time. Why all of a sudden is the army involved? What was the army sent to do?
Get them back.
Bring them back by force.
Really? Okay. Well, that's one possibility. In Az Yashir, it says, Amar Oyev, Edof Asig, Achaleg Shalal, Timla Emo Nafshi, Arik Chabi, Torishemo Yadi. Can you please explain that pasuk to me?
Say it again.
Amar Oyev, Edof Asig, Achaleg Shalal, Timla Emo Nafshi, Arik Chabi, Torishemo Yadi. The Oyev said, who's the Oyev? The Mitzrim. I will chase them. I will catch up with them. We will divide the spoils. I will take out my sword. And we will inherit them. They were sent to destroy the people. They weren't sent to bring them back to slavery. They were sent to kill them. The army was sent to kill the people. The people were also in terror of the army. Right, what did the people say?
Where did you see that pasuk?
That's in Azir Shemosha. Vayisub bnei Yisrael v'neihem v'hineh Mitzrayim noseh achareihem v'yiru ma'od v'yomru al Moshe ha'mabli ein kvarim b'mitzrayim lekachtanu lamut b'midbar. Why are you taking this? They saw that they were about to be killed. Mazot asita lanu l'tzerem Mitzrayim. Halal zeh adavar shedibarnu l'elech Mitzrayim l'emar chadamenu na Mitzrayim ki tov lanu v'em Mitzrayim m'tein v'em bar. We would rather better read than dead, right? We would rather be slaves than be killed. At this point, the threat is being killed. Paro takes the army and chases them in order to kill them and to take all the spoils. Okay? So Paro, not Yisrael, Paro breaches his contract. And when Paro chases after the people in order to kill them, as opposed to bringing them back as slaves, at that point, the people have no obligation after God destroys the army to come back and be enslaved. It was, in other words, what you have here, if the way I'm reading the story is correct, you have, because you have this a dual story that takes place. On the one hand, the people are supposed to go free. On the other hand, you're telling Mitzrayim we're going for 3 days in order to separate, right, the religious issue from the question of human rights. In order to accent the fact that the primary issue is here is one of God, and God exists and God is involved, and right, in order that that should be the main focus of the entire story. But at some point, you're gonna hit into a problem. At some point, there's gonna be a conflict between those two different stories. There's two different narratives going on, side by side. And at some point, there's gonna be a problem. How does it resolve itself? And it resolves itself in when Paro breaches his side of the contract, which again he's not willing to do because he's afraid. And all of a sudden he sees that the people are confused and they turn around and all of a sudden they seem vulnerable, and then he has the courage to go ahead and to chase them. That's the story. At the point that he takes his army and he goes ahead and chases them in order to kill them, then there is no obligation to come back, there's no obligation to return anything, that's it. That I think is how this contradiction or the tension between these two different narratives that are going on side by side, that's how I think they resolve themselves. That's my personal theory. I'm not saying that's the only purpose of Kriyas Yamsuf, but I think it's one of the purpose of Kriyas Yamsuf, because until that, there's this constant tension of Paro saying, go, leave, like I told you, but they were going free. And it doesn't resolve itself until Kriyas Yamsuf. Yeah.
Like the fact, though, that he sent the army, doesn't that kind of make it seem that they're already separated from each other? They're not like slaves anymore? But he's viewing them as a separate, like, governing body almost.
I don't know if governing body or not. I don't know how he viewed them. It's hard to say. I know that he's telling them to kill them.
Right,
you know, if they a governing body or a.
Free.
What?
I'm saying, like, it seems as though that they're already.
I'm saying that, and I think that it was clear to everybody
that they were
free, but they promised to come back, and that they should, under the leadership of God, breach that promise would be a terrible chilul Hashem. But they never breached that promise. The breach of that promise was because of what Paro did, not because of what the Jews did. Yeah.
Isn't it like chilul Hashem is like more not to the other nation, but necessarily Jews, how other Jews perceive them.
Who says?
I mean,
where'd you make that up from?
This is what I was told.
Okay.
Someone told
All right.
me.
Okay.
No, they're not true.
Not necessarily, no.
Okay, but I mean, like, within, like, the Jewish, obviously within the Egyptians, like, they said, okay, we're going to go kill them, but within the other Jews, did they know that it was a thing that, besides the fact that the army was coming, did they know that, oh, the army's coming, meaning they're going to kill us and not necessarily bring us back?
I mean, that was certainly what they thought. That's what they say they're afraid of.
Wasn't that before Kriyat Yamsuf? That was more of the army's coming and we're trapped.
I mean, no, it sounds like they think they're going to be killed. You know, they could have just said, okay, take us, we don't want to do anything, we're not fighting, take us. They were afraid they were going to be killed. That was clearly the assumption. Yeah.
So, if the intention of Paro would have been to kill Bnei Israel, his motivation would have to have been that he thought they were running away. And Bnei Israel,
of course they thought they were running away. Of course they thought they were running away.
Right.
That I proved to you that. Gabriel told you that they're running away. I didn't make it
so
up.
But then it's only a technicality that they didn't.
What?
Like, does it really solve the moral issue of tricking Paro if it's only a technicality that they didn't run away?
It's not only a technicality. They never really ran away.
They didn't, but they were intending to. And the intention was always part
of it.
There was
no collateral, right? How it would have played its way out had this not happened, we don't know, because this is what happened.
But Moshe was talking
And this is also what had to happen. There was no other way it played its way out. This was part of the divine plan. And it was, this is the way it was going to happen. Right? My problem is not that these poor slaves are running away. My problem is that God, who's the leader of these slaves, is tricking Paro as opposed to confronting him. My problem is God. My problem is not these poor slaves.
But he's still telling the slaves that he's going to free them when he's...
Right. But he never... But the people or God never breaches his side of the bargain. That's my point. Again, I don't know. I just read the story to you. I asked a number of different questions. I told you my personal theory. It might be wrong. It might be right. It might be wrong. But it's something to think about. My point is that these are really real issues that one has to think about. One has to read it. You know, I think read the story with sensitivity. And I think we're so used to reading the story of Yetzias Mitzrayim or Torah in general that we don't think about really very, very basic questions. And by asking some basic questions, all of a sudden you see things that you don't see before. And I just think it's important to read a story and, you know, not to take Torah any less seriously than we take literature. You know, there's so much depth over here and so many questions. And when one asks questions, maybe you could also touch upon things that you maybe that are a little bit deeper than a more I don't know English anymore. Superficial reading. Shitchi, that's superficial. Yeah.
You said that Paro only sent his army after Bnei Israel, after he saw that there were people from Bnei Israel coming back.
That's what again.
Vulnerable.
Again, all this is explicitly in the pasuk. Vayidaber Shem Moshe Lemor, Daber al Bnei Israel. Speak to the people. I'm Perek Yudal Pasuk Aleph. V'yashuvu v'yachanu lefnei piachirot. Let them come back, return. Right? They had already gotten to the midbar. By the way, it says that they had in pasuk. V'yisum misikov v'yachanu be'itam b'ktzem midbar. They got to the edge of the wilderness. God tells them to turn around and go back. V'yashuvu lefnei piachirot ben migdol uven hayam lefnei bal tzvon nechachot tachnun al yam. Come back. You know, towards Yamsuf. Va'amar Paro, right? Now, Va'amar Paro is not what Paro said. Va'amar Paro is not what Paro said. Okay? Va'amar Paro is what God tells Moshe Paro will say. Right? Come back, and then Paro will say, Livnei Yisrael, Nevuchim Heim Ba'aretz, right? They're confused, they're lost. Sagal Bar, they don't know how to get into the wilderness, they're lost, they're all confused. Again, the religious issue. They're gonna chase you, I'm gonna strengthen. Paro's gonna all of a sudden think that they're confused, and therefore he's gonna chase them. And V'yasuchem. Right? And then the people did and they came back. So Vama Paro is what God says Paro will say. Then, Vayugad leMelech Mitzrayim ki varach ha'am, Vayafech levav Paro v'avadav, and he says, Mazal tasinu ki shlach me'isom me'avdeinu, and then he goes and chases them. In other words, I didn't make that part of the story. I didn't make up. That's in the Torah, right? Everything else I made up. That's here. You know, it's clear that there's entrapment here. That's exactly what's going on. Okay. As a matter of fact, the you know, the entire important one takes a look sensitively at the psukim that deal with Kriyas Yamsuf. It keeps referring to it with terms that are reminiscent of war. Kriyas Yamsuf is war. You know, Obama's policy with Iran. You know, sanctions, and then, you know, negotiations, and maybe it will work, maybe it won't work. The difference between, you know, up until this point, with Paro, it was negotiations. When you agree based on negotiations and sanctions, so you might be pressured, but you're agreeing as a sovereign. You haven't lost your independence. Right? When you lose a battle and you're defeated, then you also lose your sovereignty, you lose your independence, you lose your sense of respect. You know, a nation that's defeated is different than a nation that gives in to pressures, because they decide that given those pressures and those economic sanctions, this is a better policy than the other policy. But it's a sovereign decision that they make. The Kriyas Yamsuf all of a sudden is a war. and Hashem Yishmachama v'Hashem Shemo and Markevot Paro v'Chelo. All of a sudden, there's the Egyptian army, and it's a war. It's a war not between, you know, the men, women, and children. It's a war between God and the Egyptian army. And up until this point, it was negotiations. Negotiations, and it was sanctions, and it was negotiations. And in order that Paro should agree by himself to let them go. But at a certain point, Paro has to be defeated. Which is another, by the way, another purpose of Kriyas Yamsuf. Because up until this point, it was all negotiations, and it was a sovereign decision by Paro, which he goes ahead and breaches, and then he comes with his army, and then he is defeated. So Kriyas Yamsuf, you know, combines a number of different things together and a number of different purposes. And there's also the religious purpose that you mentioned of the Jewish people all of a sudden seeing the hand of God, and there's a great religious experience of Kriyas Yamsuf as well. So there are a lot of different things that come together in Kriyas Yamsuf. But anyway, that's the story that I see the way I read it. You know, I can't impose this reading upon you. I hope that at least it raised certain issues and that you'll think about. If you think that what I said makes any sense, so I'll be happy. And if you think that it, you know, it motivates you to think about it and come up with things that are better, I'll even be happier. Okay. Any questions about this year?
Yeah, just quickly, to play devil's advocate, when you, you know, let's just relate it to modern life, let's say there's someone that I need to borrow a stapler from an office, so they say, okay, please leave something, you know, collateral, so that way I'll know you're bringing the stapler back. So I say, okay, how about you leave your phone? I need my phone for something, whatever it is. How about this? I can't. Do you know what? Just take it, and I'll just have to trust you. That doesn't necessarily mean that he's giving up on the stapler and saying, oh, well, that's it, you know, I guess I'm never getting that stapler again. The key is that he's assuming I'm going to get the stapler, and then let's say I say I'm going to need it back at this day. If they say, you know, I'm going to need it back on this day, and, I, you know, it's after that, he's going to send someone and say, hey, DA, you didn't bring the stapler back.
Mm-hmm.
You know, he's going to send someone after me. But, you know, it doesn't necessarily mean, you know, that therefore I should just run away with the stapler. Okay. That I should probably go ahead and give it back.
Right, right.
But it seems that Bnei Israel is doing the exact opposite. Right. Instead of okay. They're running away with the stapler.
Absolutely. So I'm going to ask you to answer that question.
You're going to ask me to answer it?
All right. Try to figure out a difference between a stapler and between freedom. I'll let you work on that. Okay, you are the devil's advocate, so you answer the question. Why do I have to answer the question? It's a good question. So what's the answer? No answer between a stapler and between freedom.
I mean, clearly there is. I was just trying to give like something that's a modern example that I actually experienced.
I know. I think a staple. All right, so, but given a modern experience, that's something closer to freedom, right? Right. Not a stapler. Right. A stapler, I think you should give back. And I really think that how we talk about the staplers here, I think the Israel would have given them back. Yeah, I think so. But we're not talking about staplers. Right? That's not what we're talking about. Right? So you'll answer the question, right? You realize that there's at least a direction to answer the question.
Yeah.
Okay. Right. That's my point. Okay. We're not talking about staplers. Okay. Any other questions? Not about this year. About anything. What? About anything? No? No question? About anything? I'm going to try if that answers all your questions. Great. Wonderful.